And now, broadcasting from their secret hideout, Checkpoint XP presents a show about comic books and superheroes. Robbie Landis, Joe Sloan, The Other Identity.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to a spooky edition of The Other Identity. Of course, you're joining us, as always, from the glorious grotto. And today, I'm not the Great Landis. I am Star-Lord, and I am joined by... Sith Boy?
Sithly.
Sithly?
Lady Sith.
Lady Sith.
This is a female Sith cosplay.
Okay. Lady Sith. Just be careful you're not encroaching too much on Lady Sith there.
Yeah, we do a comic book podcast. You got to be careful about
that. We do. You're coming through a little bit muffled. I was hoping when you came in that was a muzzle that was on you, and I wouldn't have to worry about taking any of your sass today.
You're going to have to take my sass every day.
Great. All right. Well, guys, it is, of course, Halloween here, and we thought that we would bring you something appropriately themed, so we kind of racked our brains a little bit with what to talk about on a Halloween episode of The Other Identity. And Joe came up with the idea of maybe doing a retroactive review.
Yes.
On a spooky thing.
Well, I mean,
it's not really spooky, but
I don't know how many, like, really good Halloween stories there are in comics.
We could always do Marvel versus zombie stuff.
Right, we could always do Marvel zombies. But I remembered back to when I was working at the comic shop, there was a series.
Okay,
coming
I'm
in.
Gonna need you to take that. I cannot okay. take you seriously with that.
Let me unmuzzle myself.
I tried. I really
no,
did.
No worries. So there was a series in that was coming through the comic shop when I was when I was still working there, and it was called Return of the Night of the Living Deadpool. Now, that led me to believe, well, wait a minute, there must have been a first Night of the Living Deadpool, and so we thought, as a retro review, we would do Night of the Living Deadpool.
And there was. Now, just out of curiosity, does Return of the Night of the Living Deadpool, like, actually take place after the first one, then?
It
like,
picks it's shortly after
shortly
the events
after.
Of the first one. Yeah.
Okay, I might have to go and read that, then, because I'm going to tell you right now that while I love Deadpool, I don't know that I really love this.
It's different. I'll give you that.
I mean, it was Deadpool, so I guess it was fine.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I'm going to have to give it like a solid like C+-ish.
Really?
Yeah.
To what? Why?
I don't know. Like when I got done with it, I'm just like, all right, well, that was a thing.
So I had read Return of the Night of the Living Deadpool, but I hadn't actually read the original Night of the Living Deadpool.
Oh, okay. So you didn't go and find the first one before you had started the one that had just
correct.
Came in then.
Yeah, correct. So this was actually my first time reading through the original Night of the Living Deadpool, which was kind of fun, kind of knowing what happens in the next book.
Right.
But so for those who have never read it before, the basic premise of Night of the Living Deadpool is it's every zombie movie ever, and it basically just stars Deadpool.
Yeah,
so
Deadpool wakes up and the zombie apocalypse has begun.
Yeah, he wakes up. He'd been asleep for a week in a food coma after eating way too many chimichangas. And he wakes up to find out that the dead now roam the earth or have ravenous hunger for humans. It is a little different in that the dead can all talk.
Yeah, I will say that's what I thought was a nice touch is that, you know, there have been zombie flicks that have played around with the idea that since they're reanimated, there is still a little something echoes
yeah,
of memories
like,
or something.
It's like
they hesitate or something like
yeah.
in The Walking Dead. You know, you see this lady that's constantly trying to get back into her house because something about her just remembers, but
right.
you know, can't quite use the doorknob. So that was cool, and it led to some pretty decent twists, you know, where the kids sneak out to try and find food for the
yep.
morning, you know, that was all not, you know, nice and whatnot. I mean, look, as far as a Deadpool comic goes, like, yeah, there were some good Deadpool moments, you know, when he finds the, after the kids, you know, the thing with the whole kids, where he finds this settlement and this clan cult of old ladies
church ladies
right that
up.
Are helping to also fully cleanse the world or whatever, like
yeah.
sure that was pretty Deadpool. And I don't know how I really felt about the him being bit and like, okay, yeah, he turns into a zombie, but only for a little while.
Yes.
Part of it.
So, I mean, basically it is when he gets bit, the zombie virus is very strong, strong enough to work against his healing factor for a period of time. But eventually the virus kind of gives out and
right.
he regains his control.
Yeah. And because of that, he basically destroyed the entire little village that he had found.
Yep. It's a bad day for everyone involved.
Yep.
And
including Clarence, the AIM scientist or air scientist in this case.
Yeah. So, I mean, that for being a book that was clearly just meant to be a little holiday one shot.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it was four issues long, but for being a little story around the holidays, they do play with a lot of different things.
You know, I think maybe this is the reason why I was a little bit disappointed in it, and maybe it fixes it in the second one, which I'm going to go and read now. But you're right, it did actually do some clever things, but I feel like it didn't go far enough for me. Like, it's like, oh, look, some clever ideas that we're not really going to do anything with. That they could have. So, like, at the very end, the way that this issue culminates, spoilers, is,
spoilers,
you know,
on an 8-year-old book.
Yeah. He, you know, after talking to Clarence, realizes that AIM is the one who is responsible for the zombie outbreak and virus. And he figures, I'm going to go there and see if I can't figure out how to fix it.
Yep.
And, of course, he gets trapped in there with way too many zombies. And he's like, I don't know science stuff and there's nothing I can do. So,
yeah,
Hail Mary.
I love how he gets there and then goes, wait a minute. I don't know how to fix
any
of this.
Like when
what
he's
were
like,
you expecting? Like, there'd be a big vial that said cure on it?
Well, I mean, the idea was, since he had Clarence's head and there's a little bit of something in there, he's like, oh, you can help me figure it out, right? But when he can't really talk anymore and his jaw is liquefying, I like how he's just like, oh, that's it. Forget the fact that there's like 50 other zombie scientists around
in
here
there.
You could potentially do that with.
Did they work for AIM?
Ah, who knows? But he decides, I'm just going to take the virus and just drink all of it and see what happens? Question mark.
And we do find out what happens. It combines with his healing factor in spectacular ways, and now anyone who bites him gets infected with the Deadpool virus,
and he becomes an omnipotent zombie hive mind.
Pretty much, yes.
Yeah.
That is how that book ends.
Yeah. So that was a little disappointing to me, because what I actually thought was happening, what I thought would have worked just as well, but I guess wouldn't have lended so well to another book, was I thought that with the infection like fully merging with his healing factor, his DNA or whatnot, creating a more potent version of it, I thought that as things were eating him, they were getting his healing factor, turning back into human. And so now the cure for the zombie apocalypse would be all of these people who now have some trace of the healing factor going around and purposely getting bitten to cure all the other zombies. And it would be like a reverse zombie plague.
Yeah. That's interesting. I wouldn't have hated if they went that way. One of the things I liked about Night of the Living Deadpool is it's meant to pay homage to Night of the Living Dead. And Night of the Living Dead, of course, has a very downer ending. I don't know if you've seen Night of the Living Dead.
I mean, sure, but
it ends with them all dying.
But Deadpool, I feel, has always been about, you know, flipping expectations on their head.
So if this makes you feel any better, I'll give you the premise of Return of the Night of the Living Deadpool. The world is almost completely overrun with Deadpools now, except one Deadpool has just sentience. It's not part of the hive mind. And he meets a little girl who is immune to the Deadpool virus and to the zombie plague, basically, and tries to keep her alive. That's the premise of the next
book. Okay, interesting.
And it's him versus basically millions of him.
Okay, all right. Well, you guys joining us here for The Other Identity for our special Halloween episode, where we're doing a little bit of a retro review of Night of the Living Deadpool. You know, we decided we wanted it to be Halloween themed, but wasn't really sure what to do. This might actually, you know what? Throwing this out to you guys, any of you listening to The Other Identity, I think going forward as Halloween, or as, sorry, not Halloween, as holidays approach, you guys should let us know if there's anything in particular you'd like us to do or cover for our specials. But we'll be right back, guys, here in just a second.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
I want to thank you guys once again for joining us for The Other Identity, whether you are watching live or if you guys happen to have downloaded the podcast. We love every bit of your consumption of what we do, but you should definitely join us live. That's every Thursday at about 3 p.m. Eastern time.
And, you know, you were something you mentioned before the break there about them maybe helping us with, you know, some holiday episodes in the future. We're coming up on Thanksgiving. If there's a Thanksgiving-themed comic out there that you're a big fan of...
Is that a thing?
I can't think of one off the top of my head.
No,
but
I
mean, they made a Star Wars holiday special. There could be a Marvel Thanksgiving, a very Captain America Thanksgiving.
There could be.
That would be very insensitive.
Now, one of the points in Night of the Living Deadpool that worked just fine. There's nothing wrong with it, you know. But I was expecting something different and thought could have been a lot funner. Funner. Was when the kids had mentioned to Deadpool in this town that, yeah, you know, there's another superhero living here. We saw his costume, especially when they opened up and I saw the yellow.
Yeah.
I was expecting Logan.
Oh. See,
he has the healing factor, too. So it would make sense that he might also still be around.
Yeah, I was wondering if you were going to recognize what the costume was, because I had no idea. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, it might have been Logan, if not for the fact that I think the X-Men were in Marvel exile at the time that this book came out, but...
Okay, but when is Deadpool ever... Like, I feel like Deadpool usually isn't considered part of, like, the main canon.
I mean, there have been some books where it's Deadpool, old Captain America, mm-hmm. and Logan, and they're like a trio.
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever read that story, by the way. It's pretty good.
Yeah, no, actually, when I first saw it, I didn't immediately connect it with AIM, for some reason, like, the first thing that popped into my head was Bob from Hydra.
Oh, that would have been a weird call.
Is who I thought that it was going to be. But then, you know, when he went in there and he's AIM, I'm like, oh, that's right. Hydra's more like the green with the red eyes or the red goggles or whatnot. So, yeah. Again, overall, it was fine. I feel like it didn't really come into its own until the end. I think this was definitely... See, here's the thing. Had I tried to read this as it came out, I'd have probably read the first one and been like, eh.
Yeah.
And probably never went back and bought the rest of them. This is definitely better as just like the whole, you know, all four of them at one.
Right.
Because I feel like it doesn't really come into its own as a story until you start getting to like the AIM stuff and the virus and things like that. But then again, I mean, with the ending in, because of what I saw coming or what I thought I saw coming, it just kind of fell on deaf ears with me.
One of the things that I really appreciated about the book and particularly the way they write Deadpool. And
by the way, this is just for the rest of eternity, always hear Ryan Reynolds in my head now when reading Deadpool.
And that's literally what I was about to say, is that now when I read Deadpool dialogue, I always hear it in Ryan Reynolds' voice, and it's amazing.
In his cadence and everything.
It's amazing how much like it makes you respect Ryan Reynolds' performance, that he clearly read a lot of these books and had a pretty good idea of how he wanted to, you know, portray the character. It works.
So hold on. Has Deadpool liking the Golden Girls, has that always been like a canon thing?
That is not unique to Ryan Reynolds. That has been a thing.
Okay, all right. Yeah. Because I know that Ryan Reynolds himself is a big Golden Girls fan as well. You know, he wore the B. Arthur shirt in Deadpool 1,
yeah,
which he had actually donated money to a charity to get permission from, I think, B. Arthur's grandson or something to be able to use her likeness just for that scene to be able to wear that t-shirt. So when I saw in the comic that, you know, Deadpool had walked into the diner or whatever and was like, you know, there's a Golden Girls marathon coming on
TV
or whatnot,
yeah,
flipping it over, it just goes to show you, you know, so it's just one of those other things that Ryan Reynolds also liking Golden Girls it was just that role was a perfect fit.
And can confirm, Deadpool came out in 2016, Night of the Living Deadpool 2014, so yes, that would have been
predated it.
Okay.
At least in this one instance.
I admittedly don't know if I can recall specific instances of him being a big Golden Girls fan before that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there are, like,
maybe
I'm
just not, references here and
yeah
there.
Something
yeah.
where he mentions it, like, I mean, a lot of the Deadpool stories that I know, I remember like the the more broad strokes of them. I don't remember a lot of this, the specific references. You know, I remember him trying to kill get the Hulk to kill him. I remember that story.
Deadpool in Ultimate was not like the Deadpool that we know. He was, I think there was one arc with him where he was a mercenary that was hired by someone or other to kill the X-Men in the Savage Lands, and he, you know, is portrayed. He's like using some type of cloaking or some weird technology to make himself look like Xavier to lead them all there, and then, you know, when it goes to him, if I remember correctly, his entire body is robotic except for his head, which is in a fishbowl on it, and it wasn't
weird.
It wasn't that great.
Vivictus in our chat over at twitch.tv/checkpointxp saying there are apparently more than 5 Thanksgiving comics.
Wow.
Justice League is one of them.
Wow. So you're gonna need at least 2 hands to count the number of Thanksgiving comics out there. We might have to look into this.
We might have to read the very Justice League Thanksgiving special.
Oh, boy, oh boy.
What do you think that looks like? What? Because, like, I'm picturing, like, a Christmas special where it's, like, everyone's trying to get back to the Watchtower in time for dinner.
I think it depends on when they were made, because I think that would definitely work. I also can see, like, it starting with all of them at Thanksgiving, which, why they would all be having Thanksgiving together instead of with their respective families, if they have them.
Yeah.
I think makes more sense, but I can see them all getting together for Thanksgiving and, like, some villain attacking or something and, like, ruining the Thanksgiving. But now all I can see in my head is Clark and Lois at the farm, and Clark constantly checking his phone, looking for a notification from Bruce, wondering if he's going to show up or not.
Oh, my God. Yes. Yes, I need that so much. I love the moments between Clark and Bruce. Mm-hmm. They are some of the best stuff that's ever been committed to cartoons.
And I fully expect that by the end, he does show up once Clark thinks there's no way he's going to show up. And he has, like, you know, a bunch of food he's brought with him. And he's like, I'm not a monster.
Yeah, him and, like, he's got, like, Alfred with him. And Alfred's just like, shall I load in the turkey, sir?
Oh, I hope that happens. Sure, for sure. Yeah, all right. So you know what? We're going to look into that. Look forward to a very Thanksgiving annual special of the Other Identity Guys. We're going to be right back here in just a minute to talk a little bit more about zombies in the world of comics.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
So, you know, I think the other thing about it, too, was as I was reading through Night of the Living Deadpool, I think all I could do was, whether it was fair or intentional or not, I do have some experience with Marvel zombies in the Ultimate timeline, which was told through the Fantastic Four. You know, they were looking into their hopping between realities and dimensions and stuff like that.
Right.
And had found a dimension where basically Marvel zombies had happened. And I believe that the only people who were left alive, Wolverine was, Magneto, Doctor Doom, and then there was a handful of other people, but Magneto and Doctor Doom were like the two, like, in charge of, like, the rest of humanity. And right. Even in this instance, Magneto was like, we ain't got time to, you know, like, quibble anymore. Like mutants,
no, there's zombies
humans
everywhere.
This is all that's left of us. So yeah.
So in that telling of it, what happened to mutants that became zombies? They still have their powers?
I don't recall. I remember that arc only had a few issues in the actual zombie realm, and then they had escaped back out with the help of Magneto. I think sacrificing themselves. Oh no, what it was is Doctor Doom there had found a way to, I think, to make Magneto sacrifice himself so that the Fantastic Four could get back to their time in the normal canon, and Doctor Doom came with them because I think Doctor Doom in that timeline had died or been disposed of in some way, so he became the new Doctor Doom. But the Fantastic Four zombies, and zombies still had sentience in this realm as well, right? Ooh. So the Fantastic Four zombies were able to get through as well. And the Fantastic Four were able to basically keep them cooped up and like locked in like a containment room or whatever, and I forget what that how that ended up playing out, but every once in a while you'd get a you know, a storyline where like Reed would go down to like see the zombie versions of themselves, and they were just obviously just totally like out of their mind, freaking evil.
Yeah.
And if I remember correctly, there might have been a point where being within there, just using stuff they pulled out of the wall and stuff, that zombie Reed was actually able to find a way to get them out, and it almost caused the ultimate cannon to also end up being run with zombies. But I think they defeated them somehow.
Interesting. But. Yeah. Zombies are something that, for as many as abused as they are in movies and comics or in TV shows, they're not seen as much in comics. I feel like, I mean, obviously you've got The Walking Dead, which is maybe
which
the
is
most
by the way another one that I've read. When I was big into watching The Walking Dead, I think I got caught up to the show, or maybe a little bit past it, because they blur a lot of their comic lines. And what I found most interesting about that was actually the way that Robert Kirkman, right?
Yeah, Kirkman.
Basically used the TV show as a what if for himself. Because, you know, and not in the way, I think that, you know, Marvel's what ifs are fun and everything. You'd be like, oh, well, what if this happened, right?
Right.
But as a writer, especially when you have something that's going on as long as that. And I mean, we've seen other writers talk about it as well. J.K. Rowling, you know, talked about how she wishes that she would have put Harry and Hermione together.
Yeah.
And you know, the reasons why she didn't do it or whatever. And so I think Robert Kirkman, you know, it's cool to see in the show that there were obviously decisions he had to make as he was writing it, that he would have maybe rather tried out different things, and being able to use the show to do that to great effect.
Yeah. I mean, having read the comic books, I mean, like most people, I think the comics are better than the show. I don't know if you agree with that.
Again, because they've deviated so far from the comics, I feel like they're each their own thing, you know. I had gotten up to in the comics right when the Whisperers, what are they called? The people that wear the zombie skin? Is it the Whisperers?
The Whisperers.
I think
right.
So, yeah. I had got just up till then, and the Whisperers had killed off a bunch of my favorite characters, and I was like, fuck you guys.
And done.
But I always, you know, wanted to go back at some point. But I had thought that as much as people hated it and, you know, thought that it ruined the show, and as much as it, you know, sucked for Chandler Riggs, I actually thought that the way that they used Carl's death in the show was actually pretty fucking good. Like,
I mean,
use that to be the thing that brought or that sort of forced, not forced, but kind of inspired Rick to have leniency on Negan. Because in the comics, it was basically just, you know, all right, we've defeated him, but we're not going to be like them. You know, we're going to reestablish law, and he's, you know, we're going to put him in prison for life, basically, because that's what we would have done beforehand. And I'm just like, that's fucking stupid.
It's not as compelling,
no.
Right?
You would have killed him and been like, all right, now going forward.
Exactly. We are establishing our new laws. Hold up. Shoot.
Yeah.
All right, now we are establishing our new laws.
What it would have been is the Sabretooth sequence from Powers of 10.
Yeah.
House of X. That's essentially what it would have been, right?
Yeah.
That, you know, we're making an example out of him because he's the worst of us. And now going forward, we're going to be more civilized than he was, right? So I thought that in the show, you know, having this basically be Carl's like last, you know, final wish, his dying wish for his dad to like figure out a way to survive together, I think was a lot more beautiful and poetic than it was in the comics.
And it was one of those examples of like, you know, people who watched the show who had also read the books knew that certain characters were safe. And to make you, and really shake that fear, like,
yes,
like while even some people will be like, no, they could off Rick at this point. I feel like we're getting to the point where his story is kind of told.
Mm-hmm.
No one,
no, he left
Carl,
the show now.
Yes, he has, yeah, but yeah. No one thought Carl was going.
Yeah, fair enough.
No
well,
way.
Yeah, and again, you know, in the comics, it's what's her name? The blonde who died back in what, season 2?
Audrey.
Yeah. Audrey is the one who falls in love with him. And you know, it's or her and Rick that are the ones that are like, you know, we don't die. And then in the show, it was Michonne.
Right. Exactly. Just finding ways to tell the story differently. It's like you said, it's a what if, you know what I mean? We see that all, like, every major comic publisher at some point does their own what if kind of series, like DC, whether it's making a new universe to do it, whether it's literally titling your book What If and then giving a premise Marvel. Everyone tries to do that sometimes, and it can be really freaking lame. Like, when, like, those stories can go really badly really quickly.
Yeah, or at the most, they're one-shots, right? Yeah. Which is all I think you really probably, like with Marvel's What If, I think that's all you're really hoping to get out of them is just this cute little, hey, what if this happened story?
Right, exactly. But with things like The Walking Dead and with, hopefully, with our new Disney Plus series, I mean, do you have hope for Marvel's What If?
I mean, I'm sure it'll be entertaining, but, you know, it is just going to be an animated series. They are getting back, I think, all the
don't
voice
you say
actors.
Just going to be an animated series?
Well,
don't say it like it's some terrible thing.
What I mean, though, is you go and you watch one show, and like, I think, the What If books, it's self-contained.
Yeah.
So you watch one episode, and there, that's the end of that. So if you're expecting it to somehow connect into the greater MCU and get some, you know, clue out of what's coming next or what could be out of it, you know, I think that you're setting yourself up for disappointment.
Maybe, but at the same time, because it has that expectation of being, you know, a what if, a one shot, you can still use those what ifs to provide context to other things that are happening in the MCU.
Maybe.
By kind of exploring the absurd, you can get more context. Like, for instance, when Dr. Doom appears, let's say Dr. Doom has some sort of I'm sure he'll have some sort of mad scheme, right? So we get a what if where it's what if he had succeeded, and instead of it being awful, what if it's better? What if it's better than, the current MCU?
Like, maybe
you could do some really interesting things with your what ifs if you have the balls.
Yeah, but it's just a cartoon, Joe.
Oh, you scumbag.
Anyway, guys, that's going to be it for us today here at The Other Identity. We hope that you enjoyed our special Halloween spooktacular. There's nothing scary about it.
No, I mean, I'll tell you what. Very few comics are real scary.
I mean,
like, Image has some comics that are
I think it depends on what scares you, because I'm telling you, like reading through The Walking Dead and having an affinity for certain characters because of the TV show, I mean, there are legitimately times where I'm like, man, who's going to survive and who's not going to survive?
Yeah, and I mean, like, anime actually does a better job with some of its creepy horror stories.
For sure,
like,
for sure.
Some, like, very little superhero stuff is going to legit scare you.
That's fair, guys. So anyway, look forward to our Thanksgiving episode, which is... Oh, I have no idea what that's even going to look like, because I have no idea what to expect from these things, guys. But
we're
regardless,
gonna look for some Thanksgiving comics.
That's right. Join us next time, guys. Joe, take it away.
Will ravenous Deadpools take over the world? Will there be any hope for the planet? Tune in next year. Same Twitch time, same Twitch channel.
But also come back next week.
Yeah, that too.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.